is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Thursday, June 25th, 2020. Producing from his home in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney. I'm working from my home studio in New York. We'll start with some sad news. Eddie Casco, former manager of the Red Sox, passed away at age 88. He played 10 years in the big leagues, making the National League All-Star team in 1960 when he was a member of the Cincinnati Reds. And he managed the Red Sox for four seasons in which they averaged 86 wins. They never made the postseason, though. That, of course, was during the time when the Baltimore Orioles dominated the American League East. Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred did an interview with the Associated Press, and in that he said, we need to get back on the field, and we need to, in a less charged environment, start to have conversations about how we, and the we in that sentence is the commissioner's office, my staff, the clubs, and the Major League Baseball player associations and the players, can be better going forward. We owe it to our fans to be better than we've been the last 3 months. He, of course, referring to all the disagreements in the labor discussions between the two sides that led to no agreement. Tucker Barnhart, Reds players representative, told the Associated Press, in my opinion, it's a damn shame that the ramifications of this are going to be felt for a long time. I grew up a baseball fan, and I'm a baseball fan first, and I think it sucks that it's had to go on the way that it is. But I hope that getting out and playing will kind of mask some of the bruises that the game as a whole has taken over the last few months. Head of the Player Association, Tony Clark, would not directly respond when asked whether lasting damage has been inflicted to the game. He said, I think there is an opportunity to move forward, move our game forward. And as it relates to the atmosphere in general, the lines of communication remain open and will count that as a positive in the days ahead. Players from the Mariners, Tigers, and Red Sox have tested positive for the coronavirus. More members of the Phillies organization tested positive. More members of the Blue Jays organization. And there is general pessimism about whether baseball can pull this off in the face of the pandemic. Houston owner Jim Crane says he plans on allowing fans in Minute Maid Park because the team needs revenue. That's in conversation with reporters on Wednesday. In recent days, we've seen the numbers for the coronavirus spike up significantly in the state of Texas. Today, we'll be talking with Bob Nightingale of USA Today, Marley Rivera of ESPN. Before we get to those conversations, check out the latest edition of the Hoop Collective podcast. Avery Bradley's absence is significant, but is it enough to derail the Lakers' title chances? Brian Windhorst, Jackie McMullen, and Tim McMahon discuss that, as well as growing concerns around the league amid a number of positive coronavirus tests publicly announced this week. Find it wherever you get your podcast. Marley Rivera covers baseball for ESPN. And Marley, first off, how are you doing?
We're doing all right. I mean, really good news in New York, bending that curve. But obviously, Buster, it's not what's happening United States-wide.
Which is why we need to split our conversation into the fantasy and the reality. Let's just suspend the reality of the moment and let's just imagine that they can play 60 games this year and that we'll have a season that has been mapped out. We'll start with this. Which team in your mind is especially dangerous in a 60-game season?
I think really young teams, because of the fact, I'm not saying that now, you know, teams like the Blue Jays or the Tigers, you know, like these kind of teams that are super talented and super young, the Marlins, you know, have a chance to, you know, to win the World Series. But I do think that it's really going to benefit them up the get-go, right? Like, this is something unprecedented. We haven't had this kind of lull in a training. And as we know, both players are creatures of habit, particularly baseball players. So it's going to be interesting what happens with these veteran players that had to disrupt their training. So I'm favoring here really, really young, talented teams.
What about a team that could be in trouble?
I think the teams that depend too much on their power, you know, it's going to be, you know, those teams in trouble. But the same token, right, the teams with really, really solid pitching, you know, will be number one in terms of, you know, we always talk about batters heating up, right? Like, it takes a little bit to get their timing at the plate. So if you have really, really good pitching, then you will do well. So then the teams that don't have to have a little bit of erratic pitching, like among them the Atlanta Braves or the Minnesota Twins, are actually the ones that really, really come to mind. They just really a lot of offense, but their pitching is just really suspect. I think those teams are in trouble.
along those lines, those two teams for those categories for me would be the Rays, a team that's especially dangerous because of deep bullpen.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like at the outset of whatever competition there is, that all those guys will be ready to go. Like, they'll be at full speed, you know, throwing 98, 100 miles per hour right out of the gate. And a team potentially in trouble, I look at the Houston Astros, because they lost Garrett Cole. You know, Justin Verlander still working his way back from the surgery that he had in the spring. What do you think of those two picks?
I think that you're absolutely right with those, and it goes along the lines exactly what I was thinking. As you know, Buster, we had to put in our predictions today for the first time. So in this fantasy world, this is a really good day in this fantasy world that we do have a 60-game season. But at the same time, I agree with you. The teams with really, really solid pitching, right? And you mentioned the number one that is going to be very, very dangerous, the Tampa Bay Rays. Couldn't agree more with you. And I think the Astros are going to be okay, given the fact that they do have talent in their pitching. I'm just really, really concerned about Minnesota. Like, that is such a talented team, but I just don't know. Like, you look at the pitchers for Minnesota, and then you compare them to the pitchers maybe in Cleveland, you know, maybe some solid pitching in the NL East or the AL East, and I think they're really, really in trouble.
My two MVP picks that I turned in for ESPN.com, National League, I got Bryce Harper, who historically is a great starter. Mm. He gets out of the gates very quickly. And in the American League, I got Francisco Lindor because it could be that a third of his games are against the Royals and the Tigers.
Yep.
He's in the prime of his career. You know he's chomping at the bit trying to get back on the field. So those are mine. What about you?
Mine was exactly Francisco Lindor on the AL. And exactly for the same reasons that you said, and I'm adding the White Sox into that list, right? So it's going to be a very, very limited amount of really excellent pitching that he gets to face. Right. Like, a lot of the really, really good pitching that Francisco Lindor will get to face is in the NL Central. It's going to be in the interleague series. But absolutely, like, I think he will crush pitching in a 60 game season. I really, really like him. In the NL, I picked Ronald Acuña. I feel that, you know, what he has done, he was primed, you know, to break out. He was my pick if we had 162 game season. But at the same time, I feel that really young kids, Buster, they don't believe, you know, when you tell them that this season is going to be weird. They don't believe you when you tell them that that the training got disrupted. I feel like they believe they're invincible. And in a very, very short season, that's why my pick goes always towards the younger kids. And that's why I like Acuña Jr. here.
All right. We're going to shift now from fantasy to reality. You read the news every day like I do, with all the, you know, the spikes in coronavirus in various states, and for Major League Baseball, absolutely critical states, Florida, Texas, Arizona, California. You have such a great feel for players, and you have conversations on a regular basis with players. What are you hearing from them about the current situation?
That they're petrified, that they want to leave Florida immediately. I've spoken to quite a few players that live in Florida, because that's another thing, Buster, right? It's not only the ones that train for Grapefruit League. As we know, a lot of players reside in Florida, and the same thing for Arizona. But Florida is, you know, one of those that is really, really heavy with the players, and they just want to leave. A lot of them are already packing their bags and leaving. They're concerned about their families. One player told me, you know, I basically just get my groceries delivered and don't even step outside the door, because they're concerned about the fact that people are not wearing masks, they're not practicing social distancing, that restaurants, one of them that lives in Miami told me, you wouldn't know that we're in the middle of a pandemic. And as we know, those numbers in Florida are looking really, really bad, with a record of over 5,000 and something yesterday, overnight having all these cases. So that's the number one thing. They want to leave. It's the same thing that I'm hearing from the Blue Jays, who are the only team right now that, quote unquote, has to train in Florida because they're having trouble, you know, getting back to Toronto. But we know that the GM and the brass for the Blue Jays have already reached out to the Canadian Prime Minister to try to get that spring training back in Toronto, because they just want to leave Florida. They want to get out of there. They want to, you know, and then the players that actually left early, like, for example, the ones that have been training at home, like the Padres, the Astros, the Indians, to just mention a few, they feel that they're ahead of the curve. They feel like they already have all these protocols implemented, like particularly for the Indians, like they have almost everything in place. They already fixed their clubhouse. They already have the 6-foot distancing. They already have the testing in place. So those teams that started ahead, that actually started training at home, the Minnesota Twins too, they're a step ahead. So it is one of those things. That's what the players said, Buster. They're petrified about being around these states.
I made the comparison early in this, in the baseball shutdown, that Major League Baseball is like a rowboat in a hurricane in trying to manage this because there's so many factors outside of their control. Yeah. You had the shifting standard. You made reference to the Blue Jays situation, which is maybe the best example that we can talk about. According to federal law in Canada, anybody can leave the country, but if someone attempts to come into the country, the average person has to be quarantined for 14 days. Well, how do you pull that off with visiting teams as you move forward? You know, even players coming into Canada, to train. So, and how do you work around that? And ethically, there are going to be a lot of questions in that country about that. I did radio up in Canada today, and they said they thought the idea of that was absurd in this current situation. We're seeing teams having to react to, local standards, the mayors, the governors, because in this country, there really isn't one federal standard. And that's going to, every day it feels like there's going to be another complication that teams have to work through. And that's why, generally speaking, when I speak with executives in baseball, they're pessimistic because of all those complications. Yes. How about you?
And not only, absolutely, Buster. And they're not only pessimistic about the complications that you're talking about, right? Yesterday, the last couple of days, you and I have had the chance to read this, over 100-page manual that almost tries to cover every single topic, but that's pretty much impossible because it's exactly what you said. Every time you think of something, there's a complication. There's another detail that you have to take care of. There's just so many details, and that's what you get concerned about. And then when you hear a lot of the executives talking yesterday, and when it comes to the point that the governor of Texas is saying, I may allow 50% of capacity in the stadiums in this state. And then we hear, that the Boston Red Sox are considering at some point welcoming fans at Fenway. These are the kind of things that give you pause. These are the kind of things, like you said, there isn't a mandate, right? Major League Baseball can't make these decisions. These are locally made decisions by the government. That is actually very precise. That is why the Mets and the Yankees put out a statement yesterday that they were in communication with the governor's office in order to not have to put their players, who now New York State, Connecticut and New Jersey, right, the tri-state area, are going to, to quarantine people traveling from places like Florida and like Arizona for 14 days. And that means that's a lot of players. So it's the same issue. So you definitely have to coordinate with the government. And when it comes to Canada, that's an international government. So that is completely different, right, from the United States. There's so many complications, but there's also a lot of hope. I feel like a lot of players are like, well, it's going to be okay. But the reality, right, it's the reality when we're faced with it, it's really different.
I feel like, Marley, that ultimately the greatest challenge within, the circle of the baseball teams is going to be having all the players handle this all in the same way. You and I live up in the Northeast. It's absolutely standard operating procedure that if you go out in public now, you're wearing a mask. And everyone is used to that. And you go into stores and you see someone standing 10 feet away and you make sure that that distance, you almost do it reflexively now. But there are other, there are other people from other parts of the country who have a different perspective and they handle that differently. And that's exactly the dynamic you're going to have among teams. And so while some players will go into this and say, it's part of my responsibility that I need to stay in the hotel and not expose myself, other players, I think, are going to go out. They're going to go out.
Well, they're also right because these are young kids, right? This is one of those things like the decisions aren't always the best. And they're going to be in places where you're allowed to go out without a mask, which is precisely what you said, right? Not every state has this ruling. It's exactly what you said here in the Northeast and also in the New England area. You have to wear, right? You have to wear a mask outside. It's not applicable in almost any other state besides California and in some places of Florida that you have to do it. So it is, and I have a little bit of an interesting story about that. I spoke to a player in one of the teams, and it'll remain nameless for obvious reasons. The player told me that a young player in that team, they found out that he had been clubbing and then went to like a restaurant overnight. And they actually took him into the clubhouse, had a conversation with him and told him, now you're going to be quarantined 14 days. And he's like, no, but I didn't interact with anyone that was sick. And they're like, it doesn't matter. And that's exactly how, how forceful you have to be, right? Because the worst decision, like everyone can make every perfect decision in the world and take care of themselves and so on. And it only takes one careless individual. That's all it takes, because this virus is so deadly, right? It is so contagious. So one careless individual, we just saw it, with international tennis star, Novak Djokovic. It is exactly what happens, that if one person gets sick, if one kid decided, to interact in a large group of people and gets infected, then he's going to affect his teammates. And then, by extension, those teammates could affect their family members. I'll give you guys a perfect example. Charlie Montoyo, the manager of Toronto Blue Jays, has a young son that went through his entire life through heart surgeries. And he is thankfully right now doing very well, but he went through a lot of heart surgeries. From now on, after Charlie Montoyo leaves to take care of the Blue Jays, he will not be seeing his family again until after the playoffs, because he doesn't want to expose, right, his children in any other way. So these 3-4 months, he will be completely away from his family. And those are the decisions that these players are going to have to make, Buster.
You got the fantasy and then you've got the reality. You're exactly right. I appreciate it, Marley. I'll be talking to you soon.
Of course. Thank you, guys. Have a very good day.
Bob Nightingale covers baseball for USA Today. We're speaking to him from Phoenix. And, Bob, thanks for joining us.
Sure. My pleasure. Thank you, Buster.
So I mentioned to Marley that this is like the fantasy portion of this conversation, because who knows where we're going to be in terms of whether or not we're actually going to be able to see baseball this year. But let's just start with this. If, in fact, there's baseball, give me a team who, in your eyes, is especially dangerous in a 60-game season.
Well, there's going to be some surprises. I had wrote this story right before baseball got shut down, never got published. A team like the San Francisco Giants, who in a 162-game season had no chance, now with all the veterans and everything else, those guys know how to play and you're not going to get worn out by the long summer. They have a legitimate shot. I really believe that. And, of course, with the schedule the way it is, just playing with your region, it really gives a big advantage to those teams in the Central.
I kind of wondered, too, about speaking specifically about the Giants. They have some, major financial obligations for the next couple of years. But then those deals start to run out. And I feel like that after the rosters are unfrozen on Friday and then going into the offseason with the expectation of where the free agent market's going to go, if you have cash on hand, oh, my God, you're going to be able to make some deals. Like, you're going to be able to be like the person working the stock market as other people are dumping, and you're going to be able to pick up different players. I kind of wonder if the Giants could be in that position if, in fact, we get to August 31st and you see teams starting trying to dump some salary.
You could, or at least this winter, because the free agent market, should be so bad, I think teams will jump. I mean, remember, even with the big contracts, the Giants jumped in there late on the Bryce Harper sweepstakes. But you're right. I mean, with all the players getting year service time, the Giants certainly weren't crying about that, because it's a year off the books for a number of those players.
All right, give me a team that you think could be in trouble in a 60-game season.
Yeah, I would think some of these teams that are heavily favored. I mean, I'm not saying the Minnesota Twins would be in trouble, but all of a sudden, Cleveland and the Chicago White Sox, could present a problem just because anything can happen. But with the back to a 10-game postseason schedule, you would think some of the Giants in the East and the West would have more difficulty just because anything can happen. I mean, the Diamondbacks, the Rockies, the Padres, they could certainly stay with the Dodgers. Remember when the Dodgers had that poor start just a couple years ago, then they took off and ran away from the pack. But if you have a bad 10 days here, it can be a nightmare.
We were talking on the South Korea broadcast this morning with Eduardo Perez. He feels like the Padres could be an interesting team, in part because of how teams are going to use whatever season they can play this year to develop their young minor leaguers. And we know that the Padres have a lot of talent, and he's been focused on them. What do you think about them in a short season?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of worry about the youth. You'd rather have some veterans in a season like this, but they certainly have a lot of depth and arms. And I think every game will be treated like postseason games. I think you can see some crazy stuff happen with the starters yanked early and other starters coming to relief. you know, almost what the Washington Nationals did last year during the postseason run. Just, you know, anybody's available almost any given day.
ESPN.com asked me to turn in picks along with other writers for a shortened season. And my MVP picks, I've got Bryce Harper in the National League, Francisco Lindor in the American League. Lindor, not only is he, you know, 26, he's in the prime of his career, but he's also, in theory, a third of his games could be against the Royals and the Detroit Tigers because of the way this is structured. For you, give me a National League MVP candidate, American League MVP candidate.
You know, I'll probably stick with my original ones, Buster, but yeah, I mean, I love your theory because I think the AL and NL Central, I mean, that's where you can really beat up on people. I'll go with Mookie Betts. I mean, obviously, it's a huge season for Mookie Betts after, you know, turning down the big money from the Red Sox. If he's going to snip that money again, he's got to have a big year. You know, in the American League, I mean, obviously, it's always easy to go with Mike Trout. But I love your Lindor idea. Lindor's – all these games are going to be on national TV or at least primetime TV. You know, with the with no travel or very little travel, there'll be hardly any off days. And Lindor loves the spotlight. Yeah, I could see Lindor easy, or I could see, you know, one of those guys in the Houston Astros. Hey, with no fans in the stands now, they can relax, play their game. You know, I could see a Correa stepping up too, a Carlos Correa.
I mentioned at the top of the podcast, I do continue to hear pessimism from folks at the team level about whether or not they can pull this off because of the fact that it's so complicated. Because you don't have one federal standard, the teams have to work in these individual standards that are being set in dealing with the coronavirus at the city level, at the state level. What are you hearing generally about the challenges that baseball faces now?
Yeah, I mean, I think the you know, talking to some of these GMs, they're bracing themselves for, you know, dozens and not hundreds of positive tests once everybody gets together and you know, and go from there. I mean, it was a shame when baseball announces they're officially coming back, and then like minutes later, you know, whoops, here comes Coors Field shut down for the week because of Charlie Blackmon and a couple of his teammates. So it'll be interesting just how widespread it is with these positive tests. But, you know, we could have hundreds of positive tests when you're considering, you know, 50 to 60 players showing up for every team.
When I've been doing radio hits this week, it's interesting. So many of the hosts will start out with, you know, the supposition that, well, you know, baseball finally got an agreement. And I have to be, you know, correct them and say, actually, they didn't agree to anything. it was amazing on Tuesday morning talking with people around the sport who aren't involved in the labor talks, the level of disgust, the level of frustration. It was so dark, Bob. Now, by the end of the day, people were starting to lock in more about, hey, we got 60 games potentially, you know, let's start to focus on that. But wow, there's just so much anger over how this all played out. Now, you covered a lot of labor stoppages. How would you compare, you know, the rancor that we saw between the two sides in these last 3 months to what you've seen in the past?
Yeah, it was like the Wild Wild West this time around. I mean, a couple of factors. I mean, obviously, social media, you know, the internet wasn't even around, right? When 94, 95, certainly not the social media. So just everything was coming out, you know, so quickly instead of waiting for your morning newspaper the next day. And I think the pandemic played a huge part in the sense where these guys weren't negotiating face to face. So instead of those guys behind closed doors screaming and pounding their fists and storming out for room service, stuff, you know, we may not know about, everything just became so public because it was all email letters and things like that. It was just the transparency was so great.
Do we really? I mean, I get it that there was, you know, it's certainly in a negotiation, at the very least, you're going to have social distancing. But why couldn't they get into the same room together? Like, you know, they did eventually when Rob flew out and met with Tony Clark out where you are in Arizona. But I still don't have really a good reason why that wasn't happening in April and May.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I know guys are spread out. I mean, yeah, Tony Clark was living in Phoenix. You know, Rob Manfred was in Florida. You know, lawyers were in New York. So, yeah, I think they should have done that in hindsight. I mean, the bottom line is when Rob Manfred flew out to talk to Tony Clark for the 4 hours. You know, they probably got more done there just that time period than they did the other 3 months. You know, I mean, they came away with different views of it, where Rob Manfred thought he had a deal and Tony Clark said no, but they made a lot of headway there.
In your mind, what's got to happen on each of these sides to make this better? Because as we talked about the other day, the current situation, all they did is defer all these larger conversations. We might be back, if there's no coronavirus vaccine, we might be back having the exact same conversations next February. So if you were, you know, we had some fun early in the week playing mediator. If you were to give some constructive advice to the owners, to Rob Manfred, and give some constructive advice to Tony Clark, to Bruce Meyer, what would you tell them?
Well, just to keep things quiet. I mean, whatever's going back and forth, you know, keep it that way. And that's the way it was before. I mean, you knew the two sides didn't like each other and stuff like this, but this one got pretty nasty. You know, you hope because of all the things these guys went through, particularly with Dan Halen and Bruce Meyer, at least they know each other a lot better. You know, the players say, hey, at least now the owner's over galvanized. You know, the owners say, hey, we stuck together too. We had unanimously agreed to that 60-game season. I think if anything came out of it, I think at least the players appreciate that the owners had 60 games and didn't go down to 48 or 52 or 54. They made it as you know, good as a season as possible. You know, I don't you know, agree with the idea that, well, they should have done this thing earlier, it wasted time. Hey, they were hoping to have July 4th games. That means they would have been in spring training last week, and that's when all the spring training sites got shut down. So I'm not sure they really wasted any time at all.
I really feel like that the part of the reason why they're in this position with this incredibly unproductive relationship is because of suspicion that's built up since the 2016 CBA. You know, it was so one-sided on behalf of the owners. I feel like that, you know, if, and Rob Manfred told the Associated Press, look, we need to be better. I really feel like that they need to go to the player association and say, look, we need to address tanking and we need to address service time manipulation, because that fueled a lot of that anger, distrust, suspicion. And on the player side, the leadership has to be engaged more. But I don't know how it got to a point where, you know, the, it felt like to me anyway, and has in recent years, where they haven't brought a lot of ideas to the table. You know, they haven't come in and been ready with the horse trading and let's talk about this and, hey, let's kick this around and this is what we need. This is what you need. A lot more of what, you know, theoretically happened when Tony and Rob met face to face.
Yeah, and that was very productive. I mean, just, you know, kept all the lawyers out and just did themselves, you know. Now, the owners will argue that, you know, the 16-team playoff system, you know, kind of helps prevent tanking. You know, with so many teams being able to qualify, it's pretty hard to justify your fan base, hey, we're not trying this year. You know, when more than half the teams in baseball are making the playoffs. Manipulation of the system, you're right. That they got, the union's got to come up with some idea there as far as how to completely prevent that. And some kind of salary structure where, you know, the players, you know, 0-3, you know, have more rights than now. You know, because basically right now, the way it is, since these guys got their upfront money, about $285,000, I mean, you're going to have about 10%, 15% of players right now aren't going to be paid the rest of the year. They won't get a single dime, you know, including postseason money.
I saw your tweet about that the other day and talked about it. It hadn't really occurred to me, but you're exactly right. And as this all plays out, if in fact they play 60 games, I do wonder if that'll inform some decisions for players about whether or not to participate as they move forward, especially in the face of the coronavirus.
Yeah, and I do believe that everybody will participate unless you have health reasons. I just don't think you can do it for financial. I'm not sure if you can, you know, look your teammates in the eyes and say, you know, man, this is going to be a crazy season. You guys play without me, even though it's going to, you know, hurt your playoff chances. I also think it already came out publicly that you're staying away because you're upset about the finances and that you're going to alienate your fan base, you know, kind of ruin any chances you want for corporate sponsorships, endorsements, things like that.
All right, Bob. Well, good to talk with you. Good to catch up. I have no idea when I'll see you next.
Yeah, maybe the World Series or a Sunday night ESPN game, hopefully.
Yeah, 2021. 2021 World Series. All right, stay safe.
All right. Thank you, Buster. You too.
Here's Tim Kirchen's Daily Baseball Fix about some weird stories.
On this date in 1988, a Major League Baseball game was started without a center fielder on the field. The Angels' Devon White was in the clubhouse finishing a phone call when the first pitch of the game was thrown. After the game, Angels' right fielder Chili Davis was asked if he'd noticed that the center fielder wasn't on the field. He laughed and said, "Well, of course I did. I yelled to the umpires, but not only are they blind, but they're deaf also." Baseball history has been filled with wacky plays. Mariners third baseman Lenny Randle got on all fours and blew a bunt into foul territory. Rangers right fielder Jose Canseco got hit on the head with a fly ball. It went over the fence for a home run. Teammate Jeff Houston said, "The World Cup is coming to Dallas. Jose was just practicing." Vancouver outfielder Rodney McRae ran through a wooden fence in right center field and finished the inning. He told me, "I've got 3% body fat and a really hard head." Indianapolis first baseman Jeff Leifer was trapped in a dugout bathroom for 20 minutes during a game. When he was finally freed and went to his position, his opponents had taken a roll of toilet paper and put it on the first base bag. And my favorite one was in 1986, when Giants pitcher Terry Mulholland fielded a comebacker from Keith Hernandez and it stuck in the webbing of his glove. So Mulholland just threw the whole glove to first baseman Bob Brenly for the out. And after the game, teammate Mike Kruko said to Brenly, "You blew it. You should have whipped it around the infield."
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Thursday coming in. Chuck Norsaurus Rex. Wow, that's a mouthful. He writes in, "Assuming the season goes through without a hitch, what chance do my Mariners have of making the playoffs in a shortened season? It's okay. I'm a big boy. I've waited since 2001, but you can crush my hopes and dreams. I've just got to know."
Yeah, we've been talking about how a shortened season brings everyone into play. I mean that less about the Mariners than pretty much every other team. So, Chuck, you know what? You got a real shot to have the first pick in the 2021 draft.
Hey, and as I've been saying about my Orioles to my friends, it's like time speeding up. You know, they only have to tank 60 games instead of 162. So it's not so bad.
Exactly.
Chris Leroy at Fatboy Leroy writes in, "I'm not saying it's Buster's fault. It took almost 3 months to get baseball started again. But as soon as he threatened to stop the podcast, we get baseball that day." Buster, why couldn't you stop the podcast 2 months ago?
Yeah, guilty as charged. You know, I'm sure that that's what happened to Rob and Tony. Probably, "Oh my God, we're not going to have the baseball tonight." Nope, we have to work out something that they can talk about on the podcast. And that's what happened.
It's nice to feel influential. Andrew DeSalvo at DeSalvotion writes in, "What do you think happens with Francisco Lindor in a shortened season? Are the Indians still as likely to trade him away before the new deadline? Or with a shortened season, is it different now? Have you heard anything about a trade deadline or anything like that?" It's interesting because we've been talking a lot of Francisco Lindor throughout the extended offseason here.
Yeah, the new trade deadline in a 60-game season is going to be on August 31st. Yesterday I asked a number of general managers about how much conversation there's going on about possible transactions because, of course, you know, there might be some teams looking to dump some money. And what I got back was, "Boy, there are just so many other logistical things that teams are working through to get players back into camp. You've got quarantine issues potentially from players coming from certain countries." Basically, I was told there hasn't been that much talk at all about transactional stuff. At some point, there will be that. I can't imagine that the Indians would trade Lindor now, because the circumstances are so uncertain, you don't even know really how to value a player like him. Like, because if you're an interested team, you could trade some prospects for him. But then what happens if we get a week into this and they cancel it all? Then what you gave up is probably going to be too expensive. So I think the teams are probably going to need a better sense of the context before they actually make an aggressive offer to deal him. All that said, I think it's more likely he gets traded in the offseason now.
Fascinating stuff. Last one up from Nancy Pred at NG Pred. We're pouring one out with Nancy here. She says she's psyched for the Major League Baseball season that baseball is back, but thinking of all those who are starting their careers are paying for rent, school, food with their minor league baseball jobs. 2020 is a lost year. And she's got a point. Well, you know, there's a lot of excitement about baseball, but it's a real bummer. I mean, those people, the people that Hannah Kaiser was talking about last week on the podcast, there's a lot of people affected here, and we need to remember those folks because this is tough times all across the country.
A lot of people affected. In fact, there is an expectation among a lot of the staffers that I've talked to, if baseball does get shut down before they can play this 60-game season, there is tremendous fear that there's going to be massive layoffs, that there are just going to be a lot of people let go if, in fact, there's no baseball this year.
Keep your head up, everyone. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. Thanks for writing in.
My thanks today to Marley, to Bob, and to Taylor. Thanks for listening and stay safe. Remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we must fight against every day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the thrill of the revving engine and pure adrenaline of flying down the highway, to the confidence of knowing that Geico always has your back with 24/7 access to claim service. But Ari Snyder has one reason in particular.
I have extremely large upper arms. They won't even fit into most shirts. Thankfully, biking really embraces vest culture, so I feel accepted.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.